Welcome back to Mastering Defense Infrastructure. I'm Darian Macy, and as always, I'm joined by Jessica Bottlebrush. Jess, can you believe we're kicking off phase four already? Feels like just yesterday we were talking about the basics of procurement, and now we're diving into the really big stuff, major defense infrastructure programs.
Yeah, it's wild. And this phase is where it all comes together, right? We're talking about the actual backbone of Australia's defence future. Today, it's all about AUKUS and the massive transformation happening to support nuclear-powered submarines. I mean, the 2021 AUKUS announcement was a real turning point. Suddenly, we're not just talking about incremental upgrades. We're talking about a whole new capability for the country.
Exactly. The scale and ambition here are just enormous. I remember working at Fleet Base West a decade ago. Nothing on this level, but you could see the seeds of these nation-scale ambitions even back then. Now with AUKUS, it's like we've hit the accelerator. We're not just building for today, we're building for the next 50 years. And over the next 9 episodes, we'll be unpacking everything from submarine bases to joint enablers and international collaborations. But today, let's set the scene with the vision behind AUKUS and what it means for Australia's naval future.
And it's not just about the submarines themselves, is it? It's the infrastructure, the people, the industry, everything has to scale up. So let's get into the details, starting with the upgrades at HMAS Stirling. All right, so HMAS Stirling, Fleet Base West, this is where the action really starts. The government's committed up to $8 billion over the next decade to expand and modernise the base. That's not pocket change. The upgrades are all about making sure Stirling can host not just our own future nuclear subs, but also allied boats from the US and UK as early as 2027.
Yeah, and the scope is huge. We're talking wharf and pier upgrades, so extending and reinforcing berthing facilities, new mooring dolphins, dredging, all to handle those big nuclear subs. Then there's the operational side, new workshops, maintenance halls, logistics warehouses, and a submarine training center. And don't forget the nuclear support infrastructure, a controlled industrial facility for handling low-level radioactive waste. That's a whole new level of safety and regulatory oversight for defense.
And it's not just on base either. There's off-base stuff too. Upgraded roads, new housing in Rockingham for the expanded workforce. I think it's about 550 new homes, right?
That's right. And the early works actually kicked off in 2024 after all the government and environmental approvals came through. The Parliamentary Standing Committee on Public Works signed off on the priority works, about $738 million just for the first phase. That included urgent wharf improvements and site prep with $75 million for immediate early works. The main construction is set to ramp up from 2025 and will run through most of the decade.
It's a real team effort too. The Australian Submarine Agency is making sure everything lines up with the AUKUS optimal pathway, and KBR's doing the technical design, especially for the nuclear support facilities. And then you've got the capital facilities and infrastructure branch and the naval shipbuilding and sustainment group all working together. It's a lot of moving parts, but it's all about making sure Stirling is ready for the future.
And the impact goes beyond defence. We're looking at around 3,000 direct jobs over the next 10 years, plus about 500 ongoing roles, just to support the rotational US and UK subs. Local training programs are already gearing up to fill those roles. It's a massive economic boost for WA, and the community engagement so far has been pretty positive, even with the usual concerns about environment and access. All in all, Stirling's transformation is well underway, and it's setting the standard for what's coming next.
So, just down the road from Stirling, you've got the Henderson Maritime Precinct. This is another multi-billion dollar play, and it's all about turning Henderson into a shipbuilding and sustainment powerhouse. The vision is to make it a world-class yard. Think large vessel construction, dry docks, heavy lift cranes, and deep submarine maintenance. It's a huge leap from what's there now.
Yeah, and the numbers are staggering. The full development could run anywhere from $12 to $20 billion, depending on the final scope. The Commonwealth and WA government signed an agreement in late 2024 to get the ball rolling. $127 million just for planning, feasibility, and early works. But the real action is coming in the 2030s, when the new dry docks and maintenance facilities come online for Australia's own SSNs.
I remember early in my career working on defence estate upgrades in regional WA. Back then, it was mostly about keeping things running, patching up old workshops, fixing roads. Now, we're talking about building the biggest naval maintenance hub in the Southern Hemisphere. It's a bit surreal, honestly.
And it's not just about the hardware. The plan is to consolidate all those fragmented facilities into one Commonwealth-owned precinct, with new fabrication yards, upgraded utilities, and better access. There's a real focus on workforce development too, making sure TAFEs and unis can supply the welders, engineers, and project managers needed. The cooperation agreement with the WA government is key here, especially for land use and environmental approvals.
And the jobs, 10,000 high-skilled roles across construction, shipbuilding, and submarine maintenance, that's a game changer for WA's economy. The project's still in early planning, but you can already feel the momentum building. By the end of the decade, Henderson's skyline is going to look very different.
Now let's head over to South Australia, Osborne Naval Shipyard. This is the big one for construction. Osborne's already got a long history with the Collins-class and the air warfare destroyers, but under AUKUS, it's expanding threefold to become the submarine construction yard for the SSN AUKUS program. We're talking about one of the most advanced shipbuilding facilities in the world, right here in Adelaide.
Yeah. And the scale is just mind-blowing. The new yard will cover over 75 hectares, with everything from steel fabrication halls to modular assembly and final testing facilities. There's even talk of new ship lifts and a graving dock for launching the subs. And the security and safety standards, well, they have to be world-class, given the nuclear tech involved.
The partnerships are impressive too. KBR is handling the design for the steel fabrication side, and AECOM Oricon are doing the outfitting and commissioning areas. These are teams with real international experience, including people who've worked on UK and US nuclear sub yards. The goal is to start building the first SSN AUKUS sub by 2028 or 2029, with deliveries in the early 2040s. It's a long game, but the groundwork is already being laid. Site work started in late 2023, and the environmental assessments are underway.
And the economic impact for South Australia is huge. Up to 4,000 workers just to build the yard, and then 4,000 to 5,500 direct jobs for the submarine builds themselves. There's a new skills and training academy being set up at Osborne, so locals can get the training they need for these high-tech roles. It's a real anchor for advanced manufacturing in the state.
And let's not forget the lessons learned from the cancelled French submarine project. Some of that infrastructure is being repurposed, and the new plans are much more tailored to the AUKUS sub's needs. Osborne is set to become one of only a handful of shipyards globally that can build nuclear submarines. That's a massive leap for Australia's industrial base.
So who's actually steering this ship? That's where the Australian Submarine Agency, or ASA, comes in. ASA was set up specifically to deliver the nuclear submarine capability, and they're leading the charge on all these projects, Stirling, Henderson, Osborne, but they're not working alone. There's Defence, the Naval Shipbuilding and Sustainment Group, and Australian Naval Infrastructure all in the mix.
Yeah, and ASA's role is pretty unique. They're not just overseeing construction, they're making sure everything meets the nuclear regulatory standards, managing environmental assessments, and handling the parliamentary approvals. For example, the strategic environmental assessment at Osborne is a big deal. It streamlines the approvals process and brings in public input, which is crucial for transparency and community trust.
And these are not easy projects to manage. You've got high security requirements, complex delivery models, and a lot of stakeholders with different priorities. I mean, just getting everyone on the same page for a project of this scale is a challenge in itself. But ASA's partnership with ANI at Osborne and their coordination with Defence and NSSG is what's making it possible to move forward at this pace.
It's a real test of project management and governance. And as we've seen in previous episodes, having clear oversight and strong collaboration is what keeps these mega projects on track. The parliamentary approvals, the environmental processes, the regulatory frameworks, they're all there to make sure we get this right, not just fast. Let's talk about people for a second. All this infrastructure means thousands of new jobs. WA and SA are both looking at huge boosts in high-skilled trades. We're talking welders, electricians, nuclear engineers, project managers, you name it. And it's not just about numbers, it's about the right skills for a whole new industry.
Yeah, and the push for nuclear engineering and advanced manufacturing is massive. The training academies at Osborne and the new programs in WA are all about building that pipeline. It's a big shift from what we've seen before. This isn't just about defence. It's about creating a high-tech industrial base for the whole country.
And that's where knowledge sharing comes in. I've seen firsthand how initiatives like DECnet can help upskill professionals, bringing together all the public info, best practices, and lessons learned. It's about empowering the defense community, making sure everyone from the apprentices to the project directors has access to what they need to succeed. We've talked about this in earlier episodes, but it's never been more relevant than now with the scale of AUKUS.
And it's not just about defense either. These skills are transferable. Advanced manufacturing, project management, systems engineering. It's a real opportunity for Australia to build a workforce that can compete globally, not just in defence, but across the board. So stepping back, what does all this mean for Australia? These investments are going to reshape our industrial and defence landscape by the 2030s. We're talking about sovereign capability, being able to design, build and sustain our own nuclear submarines right here at home. That's a huge strategic benefit, not just for defence, but for regional security as well.
Yeah, and if you look at similar efforts in allied countries, the UK, the US, they've shown how nation-building projects like this can transform economies and create whole new industries. There are definitely lessons for Australia in how to manage the risks, build the skills, and keep the momentum going. And as we discussed in our last episode, it's all about long-term strategic positioning, not just chasing quick wins.
And the ripple effects are huge. New supply chains, new training pathways, new opportunities for local businesses. It's a once-in-a-generation chance to set Australia up for the future. And next week, we'll be diving into other Navy infrastructure programs, including Fleet Base East in Sydney and the National Maritime Infrastructure Maintenance Program. There's a lot more to come.
Absolutely. This is just the beginning. Jess, thanks for another great chat. And to everyone listening, thanks for joining us on Mastering Defence Infrastructure. We'll see you next time as we keep unpacking the projects shaping Australia's defence future. Take care, Jess.
Thanks, Darian. See you next week. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Bye for now.